session number 23218, Reel 6.
Colonel Goodman Tett, Reel 6. You were saying that the Germans were standing around.
Yeah, we were standing around looking at the Germans marching past us back to prison and so on. And then sudden out of the group came a German major. I was the commander of your town Skien in Norway under occupation. So we took him out of the row and then took off all his insignia and everything, and took his watch and everything he had in his pocket, and gave him a real rap on the back and threw him into the row of prisoners again. He was thinking that we would take it as a good thing that he had been in Norway on occupation.
He made a mistake.
For sure that, yes. And then I also have a very nice story from this battery, because our film photographer, he was also following an up, and they starting all this movement underneath all the places underneath in this battery. He was sitting there, and he had never been able to take part in this raid, so we had taking watches and God knows what from this damn Germans. So he found a way down into the ground. None of us had seen. We had overlooked it. And he went down with this camera that was strapped on his back, breast there. So we got down there, and there was a big group of Germans shivering and sitting down there waiting for someone to come in. And he had no guns or no weapon whatsoever. So with his camera, he asked them all to move up. He spoke German too, and got them up in the free. And then he told everybody, he had pictures of it, to move down on their knees and empty their pockets. So he took his camera and took pictures of a film on what they have left taking their put in their pockets before he had taken his part and after. So we haven't shown that. That isn't shown in the film. So that was that battery, and we got, and then of course the Colonel Laycock and the leaders of the 10th Commando came forward, and they were over of joy and proud that we have done such a good job. Mm. And they didn't believe that this was real, that we had taken out these two batteries, more or less without casualties. We had one killed in the Domburg battery, six or eight wounded, including the company commander. So then we got back, and we were told also that we would get the task force. We started this attack on this battery in Domburg at 9 o'clock in the morning. It was all over before 7 o'clock. So we had the rest of the afternoon to prepare for the next day, because then we were going to do the combined attack together with the Belgian.
Was this the attack on the battery in the woods?
Yeah, this is the attack on the woods, yeah. So the next day we knew that we had quite a lot of ground to cover. And if we got holed up, also there could be difficulties, because we thought that this we will have to clear in one go to get into this wood and get through it and consolidate on the outside of the wood. So we then advanced through the woods, and the Belgian on the dunes on the side of the woods. And we had only just started when the German battery or artillery support started to fall behind us. That meant that we were so further forward than the Germans had reckoned with, so they put all the barrettes behind us, and we, of course, then moved far, even with great speed forward through the woods, and the battery followed in I don't know how, for what it was, interval when they lifted, and about 100 yards for each lift they did from forward.
Were you able to keep ahead of it?
Yeah, we had to keep ahead of it. And you know, artillery fire in woods, especially this was in the autumn, there was no leaves on the trees. It's very sort of all these bits and pieces of wood flying all through the place. You don't know if it's from the grenades or it's pieces of wood. But
what sort of wood was it? What sort of trees were in the
wood? It was leaf trees. Mm. So normal tree.
Was it a dense wood?
No. Partly it was. Mm. And the Belgians had no difficulties. They met no difficulties on the moves. They had one outpost they had to do attack on, and otherwise it was quiet. So we had good connection all the time, and we were about, I would say, about half through the woods when the Belgian commander and the Norwegian, then our company commander, that time Lieutenant Gausland, who had taken over from Hauge, they met and discussed, and we were asked, and in accordance with the Belgian, clear that we had to push on to be able to get through it before it get dark, otherwise it would be very, very difficult. And the thing was that the further we got, the tighter the opposition was. And Imat, we had to have this very speed, so we didn't have time to clear everything properly out. And we left quite a lot of pockets.
In the woods?
Over the wood, or in the woods.
What sort of positions have they got in the woods, and what sort of numbers were they in these positions?
They have dugouts and all over the place, with even covered huts and so on in it.
So they've got overhead cover.
Yeah, yeah.
Really, they've got bunkers then, haven't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, so in the woods, you can see that also on the field.
Yes.
So, were
these what, two man bunkers or three or?
Three or four men, sort of groups.
Three or four men, so you've got groups.
So we regretted later on, of course, that we were moving so fast. But the thing was, of course, that we tried to meet this, that we had to be there and there through the woods before the darkness came.
So this means then that instead of stopping and clearing the enemy posts, you had to find ways through them.
Yep.
Just to keep the speed up.
Oh, yeah. That's also why we didn't take prisoner there.
You didn't?
No. We just shot them. And then, of course, we thought for a while that this was going to go all right. But then we got into heavier position the further back we got, because they retired all the time.
The Germans left their positions
and made out, and the line was tighter and tighter, and the fighting was tighter and tighter.
So, what you were saying, it sounds like some Germans were left behind you in the woods, but others fell back when you'd outflanked them.
Yeah. Well, those who left behind, they were always covered in under dugouts, where we couldn't see them actually.
Yes.
Yeah. So then suddenly, as it is in Holland in November, then came the darkness.
Yes.
And we had no possibility, we could hardly see the thing in front of us.
Mm.
But there, when we came there was a road going straight through the woods, only wood the road, and up to the seaside, on the dunes where the Belgians had arrived. And we found that we had no chance whatsoever to try to move on in darkness. So we covered that, said that, all right, this road is our line. And we started to dig out along this road to prepare to stay there in the night. And you know what it is in Holland. In that wood, of course, that was 2 meters under the sea level.
Yes.
And as soon as we dug...
It filled with water.
Filled with water. Mm. But we had to dig out whatsoever, because there were occasional fire from the other side. And that was also very close, not more than 20 yards away.
From the enemy?
Enemy, yeah. Mm. So we dug out and stayed and we kept down in the water during that night. And round about 12 o'clock, Lieutenant Rometvedt, which was in my platoon, he thought that he was going to look at how it was looking on the left and the right flank. he moved up and started to slowly to move towards side, then a shot hit him right through the breast. And we couldn't let him, we looked at him, and it was a very small hole in there, but at the back, one of our first aid pack, do you know the one we had in the pocket?
Yes, the first field dressing.
First field dressing. Mm. Went right into the hole in his back. Mm. The whole package went in.
A huge exit wound.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Of course it left, it hit bones and so on going out.
Oh, so it had broken up.
Yeah. Mm. And we got connection with the Benjamin, and they said that up on the hill, from on the dune, there was a small concrete cover, which was used for something or else. And there also had a lot of Germans, some Belgian had got hold of, and on the dunes they kept a group of Germans, about 20, they had them there. And among them was also a sanitation man from the medical man, and I think he was a doctor.
Yes.
So we managed after, we then had to regroup and keep a concentration along this road going through the wood, and we managed to drag Rommetveit along this road and up to this cover up on the dunes. Got him in there, and our own medical corporal and this German, they started to on downhill, and we thought that he was gone. So during the night, most of the boys in number two, in my platoon, went up to Downhill and took farewell with him. But this German medical man and our medical corporal, they managed to keep him alive till the light came on. And then, of course, over the dunes, they could come forward with the diesel and bring him back.
Did he survive?
He survived, but he had to spend 3 months in hospital. Mm. Yeah. So, but then, of course, when the light came, and we were then so worn out, and being sitting or laying in water the rest of the night, the Belgians came down towards and took over and wanted to do the rest of the clearing of the wood. It was about 100 yards, a little more than that. Mm. And they went into a big attack and lost 6 men in that attack. Mm. Because the Germans had been able then to concentrate on the rest of the area, then time we had been coming forward, resting the night. So, we also took our revenge. I put up a route with 7 men and went back and cleared out 2 or 3 of those hidden Germans on behind, because I reckon that was one or two, or must have been one of those two, had fired and wounded Rommetveit, which I at that time thought was gone. So we retired from that after clearing that wood and getting back.
How did you actually attack those concealed positions, those bunkers? Was that mainly grenade work, or was it small arms that?
No, it was only small bunkers. It wasn't bunkers, it was a hole in the wood where I could hide. Mm. And we just cleared them out as when they got down in next morning in daylight. Mm. Well, there was 4 of them left we could find there. We just fired through the doors and through that, and they came out. Mm. So that was no danger whatsoever. But the Belgians had a tough time clearing the rest of that wood. So that the rest of that day after the Belgians took about 3 or 4 hours, I think. Then we rested the rest of that day for, we now come to the 8th day of Valkyren, and we had one big job to do, that was this W-19, the battery. But that was, of course, the main defense of the island, with the open gun position, and of course this firing, this starting range for W-1, or V-1. And after one day of rest, the rest of that day, the next morning, we all concentrated. We had been forward all the time and looking at it. Because getting onto W-19, we had to cross a long, 200-300 yards long, open, flat ground. And that was considered so difficult because this battery had been, W-19, been top, they have taken all these Germans retreating back all this time, so there were purely quite a lot of extra people to defend this area. And the four commando came up from the south, and 41 Royal Marine Commando came up, and Belgian, and we're preparing them to do a night attack over that big area.
So effectively this would be a four commando operation, wouldn't it?
Yes,
this attack.
You're
going to do it at night?
Yeah, we're going to cross this big open ground at night.
Yes.
Ernste Jansen, we had. And we were all preparing to do this, as we had been recognizing and taking up position all through that day. And then in the afternoon, Sonny, I'd say about 3 or 4, 5 or so, the Germans surrounded.
So you didn't have to do the attack?
No. And then they came out marching from the W-19. And there were about, I would say, about 1,200 to 2,000 men coming out. But that had been thrown back all the time, and that was the last post. Behind them was only the sea, so they had to give out there. So that was Valkyrien operation.
You must have felt some sense of relief that you didn't have to do that attack.
Yes.
It sounds as though this particular battery would have been very difficult to approach.
Not only that, but it was the Belgian and the Norwegian Belgians who would be able to go first. Mm.
And even at night, crossing open ground like that is extremely dangerous. Presumably they would have had machine guns on fixed lines to cover it.
Absolutely, and there were so many that they could even put in counterattacks too.
And they could have put out patrols and counterattacks as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that was that. Mm. In the whole Valkyrien operation, we had, from a Norwegian troop, we had 4 fallen and 17 casualties.
Mm. So it's relatively small casualties compared to...
Belgium had many more.
Yes.
They were the same amount as us, and they had 12 killed and 27 casualties.
I think you were lucky.
So it was very bad for the morning. Then he took over for us, and then had a good fighting for Belgium. Mm. Right.
Did you go into the battery W-19 and see it? You didn't see the
inside.
Was it different to the other batteries?
It was another type of battery.
It was another type of battery.
Yeah, another type of battery. Yeah.
Was it larger in scale?
I think it was larger in scale because it was also very, very heavily against air attack.
Yes.
They get close to it because the
V1.
V1.
Mm. Were there any V1s there? Did you
see?
One
at the rope. Mm. I think that was a museum.
Yes.
That was because it was the end of the V1 at that time.
Mm.
I don't think there was any later than October, November.
Mm. Well, the V2 were coming into operation.
That's right, yes. The V2 we felt later on. Mm.
Yes, the V1 had really shot its bolt by that time.
Yeah. But we had your base. We had base in Eastbourne.
Mm.
Well, that was just the route to London, you know.
Yes.
Yeah. So.
Of course. Yeah. What happened then after this last action in Valkyrien? What did you do next?
What we did now, that we were then first of all brought back to Vlissingen.
Yes.
Where we could then lick our wounds and clean out a little bit.
Mm.
And then we were brought back to Bruges.
Mm.
And we were given, I believe it was 10 or 12 days to refit our unit, get more weapons and so on, and to put in applications for more troops after all, for all who had been in hospital by wounds. And then we had your 4 fallen and so on. And what was amazing was how quickly they put together again and made fit again those who had wounded, who were wounded. The company commander got a grenade in the elbow joint, you know, and the piece of iron was sitting in his vein and was sticking out, sitting in the middle of his joint.
Mm.
But he came back to our after about 14 days.
So did they take the shrapnel out?
Yeah.
Yes.
So out of those 17 wounded, I think we got 7 back within 40 days.
Mm.
So that wasn't too bad.
What about your casualty replacements, your reinforcements? Where did they come from?
We applied for that, and then much later, first in January, They got 20 replacements.
Mm. Not before then. No. No. No.
So then we stayed in that, so this 12, 14 days in Bruges, and then we were moved forward to Bergen op Zoom. That's in city in the
Netherlands, isn't it?
Netherlands, yes. Yes. Yeah. And we were given the task to patrol the coast of the islands towards the north, because the northern islands, Valken had been captured, of course, and South Beveland had been captured.
Yes.
But North Beveland, the islands north, they were still occupied by the Germans. Mm. So we were stationed in Bergen op Zoom and patrolled all the coastal area on those islands to hinder that the Germans tried to come back to.
Did you have any contact with the Germans during those patrols?
Nothing whatsoever.
But those patrols night and day, or were they mainly...
Mainly night.
Mainly night.
Yeah.
When you did patrols like that, how many men would you send out on a patrol?
We had always officer patrols. Ah. So we had one officer and 5 to 7 men in the patrols.
Section strength. Yeah. What sort of distance could you carry on a night? Could you cover on a night patrol?
We covered actually the longest coastline was Syd-Beveland. Mm. And we covered half of Syd-Beveland every night. Every other night we went patrol. Mm. So every other night we covered one half of the coastline, and the next half the next time. Mm.
But I mean, if you went out on an individual patrol, what sort of distance would that move?
5 or 6 kilometres.
5 or 6 kilometres. Yeah. How long would that take to do?
Take the whole night. Mm. Take the whole night.
Mm. So it's a case of moving slowly and quietly.
First moving slowly and quietly, and they had to stop for long, long times to listen and to observe what is happening.
Which of the senses do you think is most important for good patrolling at night? Is it listening, is it hearing, or is it
listening,
sight?
Hearing, after listening and hearing is the most important. And, and then patience. Mm. Not to move too fast. Mm. I had patrols on the Mars.
Yes.
On Christmas Eve, the night before Christmas Day.
That's a very hard sort of Christmas.
That is a hard sort of Christmas, especially when they are playing German Christmas songs, which are the same as we have on the North Bank.
Yes.
Yes, that this will come later on. Yeah. Yes. So that we were then stationed, and we had in Bergen op Zoom, we had occupied a Catholic school, and were well looked after of the Catholic staff on this school, and we were getting close to Christmas.
I was going to ask you how you got on with the Dutch while you were in the Netherlands.
Oh yes, but you know that we had this thing that our Dahlström, our administration officer, he spoke Dutch and French and English and so on. So we had no difficulties.
He could arrange things for you.
Yeah. So that was all right. The Dutch is not so difficult to understand for Norwegians either. Mm. It's a sort of a partly to German, partly otherwise.
Yes.
It's a mixture of all sorts of languages.
Well, they say that Dutch has German vocabulary and English grammar.
Yeah. Yes. So, now Christmas was clearing, getting near, you know, and then we had been to talk about our rations and so on. They were living on what we call this, we think this case is rationed with one man in four men in one day, or
yes.
And then so on.
One man 4 days.
Yeah, and so on. And then there has been very, very little changes all the time. Mm. So we were looking forward for Christmas.
Yes.
And then getting close to it, so we had a second lieutenant from Trondheim, some actually was transport officer for the whole of number 10 commando. And he had not much to do on this operation, so we sent him off with the jeep through Holland with the task to get hold of a pig and cabbage for what we call Norsk Sukol, that's for our Christmas dinner. And then normally every year in Norwegian forces we got aquavit for Christmas. Because, you know, aquavit is on the Norwegian ships going through around the world.
Yes, has to go around in a barrel,
doesn't it? Yeah, all those barrels were there. The had been loaded in London for use for the Norwegian government.
Yes.
And so that's why we have been given a case of whiskey every year for the troop. And our Prime Minister was also from Trondheim. So he was sent over to London to tell our Prime Minister that there is a Norwegian group now on the continent on their way to win the war alone. But if they don't get accurate for Christmas, that will be a failure. So he got the case because there was very little left so late, you know. And then he took a jeep, went through Holland and stopped on the biggest farms he saw and got up and talked to the leader there, and he got the whole pig. He gave him biscuits and cigarettes and so on in exchange. And they got to talk to him. So the farmer, not only that, but he gave him a new Belgian rifle, what? Shotgun. And he was then at that moment so close to Eindhoven that he also drove in through the Philips factories and said there is a Norwegian group now fighting for the life of Holland and they have no radio. So he got the battery radio and the net radio back on this jeep. And this was also clear then. When he got back, that was the on the 23rd of December. 24th is Christmas Eve, that's the thing we celebrate. Mm. And we were getting ready then at this Catholic school, having a big dinner party. At 12 o'clock that day, the motor ordnance came up, motor runner. Number 5 troop is to be on the River Maas this night, sending out patrol, one before midnight and one after midnight. And that was that dinner.
So you had to go on patrol, not have the dinner.
Yeah.
Did you have a dinner next day?
Yeah, we arranged the Christmas dinner, but that was quite something else.
Mm.
So that is actually the rest of the commando operation, that is that movement to the River Maas, the patrolling of the Maas, and then, of course, this attack we had on the small island, the island of Maas, called Kapellskjær, where we were beaten badly.
Mm.
So that we will have to take next time, I think. So...